From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Now, Donald Trump promised to run the country like a business. And he is, in fact, doing exactly that, lowering government spending and cutting costs wherever he can at the cost of Americans' well-being. But he is also seemingly running the country as if it were his own business. To date, a number of his policy proposals would personally enrich him. Never mind that Trump has a dismal record of actually being a successful businessman, leaving behind him a trail of bankruptcies and financial failures that others have had to clean up while he laughed all the way to the bank. My guest is Noemi Prinz, a former investment banker at Goldman Sachs, Bear Stearns, and Lehman Brothers. She's a senior fellow at the public policy organization Demos and the author of the forthcoming book Collusion, How Central Bankers Rigged the World. Her earlier books include All the President's Bankers, The Hidden Alliances That Drive American Power, and Other People's Money, The Corporate Mugging of America. She recently wrote a piece in Tom Dispatch called The White House as Donald Trump's New Casino. Welcome to the program, Noemi.
Thank you so much.
So when we talk about him running the government as a business, that's one thing. And then him running the government as if it's his business, that's a slightly different thing. He seems to be succeeding on both counts. Let's talk about how he's running the government as a business. For years, Republicans have sort of made this claim that we need a president who's more like a CEO, that if only the government was run as if it was a business from the top down with somebody making very strict decisions about spending, then we would have a successful government and a successful country. Is Donald Trump basically that dream come true for those Republicans who have been wanting to see that?
I think if you ask, and I actually have spoken to several Republicans off record, many do feel that his level of organization and sort of reliability leaves a lot to be desired. So from the standpoint of a CEO that's actually able to be trusted by his own constituents, his own party, there's a lot of gaps there. But from the standpoint of a business and running the country and invoking or trying to invoke policies that affect a positive, say, profitability in a business, there's also a lot to be desired. But at the same time, some policies that will really help people in business versus other people in the country who aren't, well, have businesses, but smaller businesses. For example, the tax plan that Trump is trying to get through, which would cut effectively by almost a half, depending on where the numbers come out, what corporates have to pay in terms of their taxes, would devastate the budget. And there's no way economically to look at that in any other form of outcome. The reality is 89% of the revenues that come into the government, that come into the Treasury Department on a regular basis, on an annual basis, come from the pockets of individuals. Only 11% of the revenues anyway come from corporations. And so by trying to invoke a tax policy that reduces their necessity to pay taxes and to reduce their receipts from the Treasury Department with respect to those taxes, by definition, you have to find that money somewhere else. Where do you find it from? You find it from cutting the budget in places that are not corporate, in places that are more social in nature, and that affects ultimately more inequality in the country and allows businesses to outperform. Mm-hmm. So from that perspective, he is definitely someone they can look up to. But there's also a lot of other issues with him, of course, and the scandals and the his own business conflicts that remain prevalent in Washington.
Now, I think what you were saying about the tax plan is really crucial, because you could have a well-run government, a well-run White House, without the scandals, without the tweeting or the Twitter bombs, if you will, as some people see them. And this tax plan would still be a pro-business, pro-corporate elite tax plan. And it's interesting because you don't see the Republican criticism of Donald Trump focusing on the tax plan. That they're happy with. What they're unhappy with is the scandal, is the fact that he's unpresidential, right? But we do need to be focusing on how he is basically rewriting the budget and rewriting the direction of this nation in a way that fulfills pro-corporate elites' wish list.
Yeah, absolutely. And the messiness and the sort of personality flaws that he brings into the White House is again something that concerns him. But if he can deliver on plans that impact their largest corporate donors, and honestly, this is not just a Republican thing. I mean, these plans can benefit some of the corporate donors to the Democratic Party as well. But on the surface, cutting taxes in this manner is something he promised during his campaign, but he also promised other things that would mitigate these tax cuts, which if you're looking at it from a CEO perspective and balancing a company slash country as he promised promised he would do, it really doesn't measure up because you don't get the numbers that you need to get to run the country. For example, he talked about getting money back and repatriated from all the multinational companies that effectively don't pay many taxes into some zero into the United States till, but instead headquarter or move things offshore in a manner that shields them from having to pay those taxes. And he talked about having a repatriation of that, as frankly of many presidents, but he was going to be strong about it. You don't hear him doing that. There's no executive order that he has signed amongst all the executive orders he has signed to do that. So there's only one side of what he promised, and that's the side that simply allows corporations to pay less mm-hmm. than they're already paying without any recourse to the money they haven't paid in the past. And that creates a budget deficit, which creates, again, this need to take money from other places. And the way it would work in terms of his tax plan, if it were to pass, would be there'd have to be over 10 years of $4.3 trillion of cutting of other programs that are currently funded by the federal government in order to make up for the fact that money's not going to be coming in from the corporation. So on paper, there's clear evidence that this program, this tax reform, as it's called, would not benefit the country. But the rhetoric is it'll benefit these companies. All of a sudden, they'll have more money. They'll hire more jobs. More people for jobs, and things will get better. But there's no real through line for that, and there's no evidence that that happens.
And of course, we shouldn't be surprised by any of this if we were paying attention to Trump's own business record during his campaign. People might have bought the line that he was going to look out for the little guy, but in his own personal business dealings, that's exactly the opposite of what he did. Hillary Clinton did not harp on this enough. This should have been an easy thing for her to concentrate on, about how he has, you know, in his business dealings, left workers and other smaller businesses that worked for him to pick up the pieces. So how important is that record to bring to light, because Trump has never cared about the little guy?
No, I mean, he cared about them when he was displacing them from homes to build other establishments just because they were in the way. But it's true, in his business dealings and in the sort of shark mentality of you know, that form of a financier, of a CEO, there's this idea that you're entitled to run your business as long as it, you know, it helps you. And if you hurt someone else in the meantime, that's no problem. He wore as a badge of honor the fact that he had bankruptcies. And Hillary Clinton did bring this up in a debate or two, that he did have bankruptcies. And his argument to that was, well, you know, I could and I did. You know, I took advantage of what was the law. And he was indeed correct. But the morality behind that law and the sort of public awareness behind that law, if you're going into the White House where you're actually running the country and in charge of, you know, of hundreds of millions of people's lives, becomes something else. And it's not okay to take that mentality into the White House, because what you do as your private business head when you invoke a bankruptcy is you don't pay a lot of people. And oftentimes the people that don't get paid in a bankruptcy that have contributed to Trump's businesses are the ones that get shafted first. They just don't get repaid. banks might get repaid. They might renegotiate loans or extensions to Trump. Other sort of angel CEO billionaires might come in and bail him out, as they did in certain instances in his businesses. But the individual workers who don't have jobs anymore were getting less money to begin with as things were going down. The different kinds of contractors and other people that worked within his companies didn't have the same benefit.
And many didn't get paid, right? I mean, there have been many examples of people who just simply didn't get paid.
Right. And he considers that okay.
He thinks it's smart.
And he said as much during his campaign. He doesn't quite say it now because it's not being brought up. And to your sort of point about this, it wasn't brought up maybe as much by Hillary Clinton, but it's something we should continue to bring up now, because the mentality of shafting a larger group of people or smaller businesses to the benefit of the larger ones, from a policy perspective, that happens a lot. But from a perspective of someone who championed himself upon helping the worker and helping the little man and being anti-establishment, the policies that he is pushing through are exactly the opposite. And that's the problem, because ultimately they will be costly. And a lot of things he said, of course, have turned out not to be what he promised to begin with. He flip-flops all the time. We all know that. But this is something very specific, where if these tax reforms, as he calls them, are passed, it will, by definition, by math, incur greater expense onto the rest of the economy and to the rest of the population.
Now, he is also, of course, as he's the commander-in-chief of this country, continuing to ensure that he gets personally enriched. Let's talk about that, which you write about. You cite Public Citizen that found that Trump formed at least 49 new business entities since announcing his candidacy, including some that were created after he was sworn in. And about of those 49, about half were related to projects in foreign countries, including Argentina, India, Saudi Arabia, and Indonesia. This has gotten very little attention. Not only did he not put his business, his main company, into a truly blind trust, he is actually creating new businesses?
Yeah, I mean, there have been new businesses under him, under actually LLCs or limited liability corporations, which is just a way of creating a company that you can't really see what's going in within it. He's done that, and that's something that the Public Citizen report, which is really, an excellent, excellent report, points out, that not only has he had businesses created under him, despite the fact that he was supposed to have been disconnected, and that his rest of his empire was in this blind trust to supposedly isolate what he was doing as president from what his company was doing, or how it was expanding globally. The reality is there were new companies that were created, and something very sort of esoteric but really super interesting that I put in the article that I read in that Public Citizen report is that the way in which some of his current his existing into his presidency little LLCs and little sort of shell companies were fashioned was that they used to be a bit more transparent, i.e. if a foreign company were to say, or a foreign country were to say, to buy a piece of one of his properties or invest in a piece of one of his properties in these mini LLCs, in these mini sort of shell companies, it would be somewhat transparent, not fully because they are shell companies, but somewhat transparent. What happened since he became president is that the number of companies that were transparent basically reduced from up to something like 70%. So the companies that he now has in his purview were sort of rejiggered so that there could be even less transparency as to whether foreign buyers were purchasing any of the properties within them or who they were or how much money they were spending. So even things that were existing were sort of rejiggered to hide participants. And that's the kind of thing that generally gets investigated. I mean, if a banking company or a finance company were being properly regulated by, say, the Securities Exchange Commission, the SEC, that's the kind of thing that would throw off alarm bells. Like, wait a minute, you used to provide some information on these purchasers, these foreign buyers of your entities, and now you're not, or now you're producing far less. What's up with that? because it is a big difference. But with Trump, because of where he is in the White House, because there's other scandals going on around him, because he continues to, you know, throw out tweets and everything else to, you know, dodge behind in terms of what's really going on with his businesses behind the White House, that's not happening.
He seems to think that he's immune from everything legally, just being president. You also write in your piece on Tom Dispatch about the era of golfplomacy, and others have also brought this up, but I think this is really important for us to focus on. In addition to the tax monies that he has spent transporting himself to his various golf courses, it is very obvious to those who want to curry favor with him that if they get a membership at one of his golf courses, which of course personally enriches him, they might play golf with him on the course, run into the president on the golf course, and bring up that lucrative business opportunity. How much do we know about who Trump is meeting on the golf course? It certainly doesn't seem to be meeting the standards of transparency that we need to have about visitors to the White House.
Right. Well, first of all, right, if he's having people come to his golf courses or getting memberships in his golf courses because they are under the private organization, a private Trump entity, Trump organization, they don't have to be disclosed unless, of course, there's a legal reason to have them disclosed. So what happens now is we can look at the numbers, we can look kind of estimating the increase in memberships, and there's been a significant increase in memberships throughout his golf courses throughout the world, and also of the actual days in which there are some foreign leaders that we can track, because there is just public media focus on, you know, whether it's the head of Japan or the head of China. There's certain people we can track and sort of piece together the broader story. And when you do that, you see that about two-thirds of the new memberships and the people that went to visit his golf courses did so on days when he was there. Now, he's there a lot of days, so it's not necessarily hard to get him on a day when he's at one of his golf courses. And as you alluded to before, they cost us money. Every time he goes to one of his non-White House White Houses, we're paying a minimum of $1 million just to go to get him there, and that does not even include what goes to his private businesses. That's just in security detail and other sort of things along the way. That doesn't include, you know, who's paying for the food, the drinks, what's going on with, you know, making the grounds nicer in that particular area, whatever else, that if we were looking at this true to how he ran his businesses from what we can glean, even though they are non-transparent, he's probably moving a little bit of money here and there from the White House to his private businesses that we won't ever be able to track. So there's all these multiple points at which he can shave off money, at which foreign leaders can pay him for exclusive memberships, can show up at the golf course when he is there while we are paying for him to be there. And a lot of it gets clipped outside the edges. And again, unless there's a real investigation into what is a true conflict of interest, I mean, it could not be clearer. You're using your private businesses to conduct foreign policy for the United States. That's something that's unprecedented. We should be investigating that. There should be disclosures of the books in terms of who is there, when, and from where they're coming. But, you know, this goes back to the fact that we haven't even seen his tax returns, for the very purpose that this is not something he has disclosed about operations in the past, nor is it likely he will disclose in the future, absent an actual federal investigation.
Now, Naomi, Trump's main sort of business product, if you will, in the last decade or so has been less the actual hotels and golf courses and more the branding, his name, right? He leases the name Trump to various hotels around the country and the world. And in that respect, he's already won. He has the greatest brand name recognition, having become president, as well as such a scandal-ridden president, than he could ever have imagined in his wildest dreams had he not won the presidency.
Oh yeah, it's kind of like getting a promotion in a company. It's like you're doing something and it's going well and you're making money, and then you get sort of get to the next level, and you look around and say, well, what can I do next? And what he did is become president. And yes, that definitely gives him a far higher exposure and his name far higher exposure than it ever could have been beforehand. Of course, he won't admit that because he's supposedly separated from the institutions that bear his name or the institutions that are actually LLCs, limited liability corporations that bear his name. But it is true that he will be making money off of this. One example, for example, just in Washington on Pennsylvania Avenue, his hotel there was projected before it opened to actually incur a loss of a couple million dollars over the first year. That's not uncommon for a resort or hotel to open up and still have expenses that were incurred during the build, during the construction, you know, kitting out the rooms and everything else. But in his case, he actually made $2.2 million throughout the first part of the year. So it was very quick to see that having a hotel was a very good investment. Now, we all knew this. I wrote about it. Many reporters wrote about this going in. Many reporters went there for drinks and everything else to check it out, as I did going in. But at the same time, now we're in reality. Now we're into his presidency. And there is definitely a profit connection from yet another one of his businesses down the White House. It wasn't hard to see that would happen. But it's certainly a conflict.
Well, Nomi Prinz, you are coming at all of these issues from your own personal background on Wall Street. You're now an author who critiques Wall Street. You do many, many different things. One of the other things that you do that our audience may not be aware of is that you work on animal conservation issues. And I know that you've got an event coming up, and I wanted to give you a minute to tell our audience a little bit about the work that you're doing on elephants in Myanmar. Very different world from what we've been talking about.
Yeah, a little different. But the connection actually between what we're talking about in elephants or any type of animal welfare or social welfare is that when leaders don't take into account what's happening on the ground to real people, to real beings, in their countries and throughout the world, everyone pays the price. And in this particular project, it's called the Elephant Project, and thank you for letting me mention it, because I have been involved in lots of animal welfare activities throughout decades. It's basically about 3,000 elephants that used to be in the logging industry in Myanmar, which was an industry run by the country and the government there. And obviously the government there is doing a lot of very nasty things to its population, or portions of the government is. But these particular elephants were sort of let go from their oppressive but yet jobs as logging. And now they're sort of in a situation where they're being poached, where they're being used potentially for sort of illicit entertainment types of activities, as well as illicit types of logging activities. And the people, the mahouts that used to sort of care for them, that were subsidized by the government in order to sort of be there for them while they're logging, have had their stipends discontinued as well. So what the Elephant Project is trying to do is raise money to create a preserve for them. It's the largest sort of population of orphaned targeted elephants right now in Asia, and to also subsidize the mahouts from a different perspective so that they can care for these elephants and also get some funding for doing that and educated in terms of other types of support for them. So it's a kind of combination of a people elephant type project, which is why I like it. We're having an event actually in Santa Barbara, so in the area, on November 9th for that. And if people want to know more about that, I will I'll have a link up on my website and also on my Twitter feed. So anyway, thank you for that.
And that website is nomiprinz.com. We'll post a link to that from our site later today. Nomi, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Nelly.
My guest has been Nomi Prinz, a former investment banker at Goldman Sachs, Bear Stearns, and Lehman Brothers. She's a senior fellow now at the public policy organization Demos and author of the forthcoming book, Collusion: How Central Bankers Rigged the World. We've been discussing her recent article for Tom Dispatch called The White House as Donald Trump's New Casino. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.